There you go.
That is right here is not a preview.
Why does it sound like that? Can you hear it?
Fine.
Yeah. Okay.
I need to let it go.
Oh, DJ.
You hear it fine too?
Now this right here is not a preview.
But as long as y'all hear it fine,
what the
cool.
album gonna bring you? Nothing like that. Sharing things I think quietly with those that admire me. Remember MTV Diary? It's something like that. I wear my heart up on my sleeve and I bleed for you.
Right, we gonna roll
cooking
into
beats,
it.
Hoping to reach like each one you. When not release, trust if you feel like my shit is weak when you see me on the
Yo, listen, it's the most versatile last name in the game. Bedside Benson checking in. We lit. Hey, yo, since we doing something like very new.
Yeah.
Very just new.
Yeah.
I'ma say Zoom Benson.
Zoom Benson.
That's what we
Zoom
doing.
Zoom Benson
right now.
Don't even
cases,
go to
case is going up.
Man, y'all already know the vibes. It's Don Jones, aka Baritone Jones. Deepest voice in the game.
Deepest voice, man. Come on, man. We got a guest today. I'm not going to do the introduction because I don't introduce grown men. So I'm going to let somebody who I think does an amazing job at introducing grown men.
So you, number one, you let your misogyny
come through
get in the way of you introducing somebody?
Come on now. It's only misogyny when you let it get in the way of things. It's supposed to get in the way of things.
I feel like you was the type of person that was raised by somebody that said pause for everything.
Yeah.
But he also says pause for everything.
Ah,
come true. On, Dev.
Hey, my bad. Guess. Hey, yo, listen. We have someone of a couple of this high caliber of a guest. You feel me? Usually we have a little friends, a couple of like homies and anything. Like now we got somebody that's like legit.
Reputable. That's the
you
word.
Feel me?
That's the kind
no, we
of
got our man Archie Green, bro. He is Cleveland Magazine's most interesting one of Cleveland Magazine's most interesting people of 2018. He's an MC, an activist, a mental health advocate. Yo, this man is lit, yo.
I'm a fan of that. I'm
like,
a
yo,
fan.
Can I just say how like I found out like I got hit?
Wait, let's see if we got this.
Ah, we got it. But look, let me give you a little backstory how I got hit, bro. So, like, listen. So, I'm working at, like, SP Plus, you know what I mean? Doing my little, like, garage at the Severance Hall. Right. And they tell me, like, yo, it's a concert tonight. Like, something going on, something crazy. Like, there was, like, by the name of, like, My Violin Weighs a Ton. And I was like, yo, what is this? Like, another, like, just orchestra doing their thing. Yeah. Say, no, a black dude, like, rapping in there, like he's doing his own thing. I'm like, oh, they let black people inside the service hall like
to rap?
they got hippity hop in there? Like,
oh no.
It's getting like that. But so yeah, like ever since then I've just been like following my man's, like really just tuning in and just observing. He's like a very dope person, yo. You feel me?
You know what I say too? I know this person is dope and I'm glad that he came through, because usually when we send people to the chat, somebody is always very skeptical about who we bring on the show.
Me.
And so
always me.
Yo, Archie, man, can you hear us? Archie, let's make sure you can hear us good.
Yeah, I can hear y'all loud and clear.
All right, man, we love to hear it. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm good. You know, 2020 is still trying to take our joy and our shine. Literally right now I'm sitting with candles on, you know what I mean, because the power is out. You know what I'm saying?
My man's setting a seance.
Hey, what he said, turn off
the lights.
A chair is not a chair.
You know what I'm saying? I'm alone in my room staring at candles. I'm not high on drugs right now, though.
Hey, come on now, man. Full transparent.
Man, yeah.
Fully transparent.
PSA off real quick?
Get your PSA.
All right, Archie, real quick, before I do a PSA every episode. I call out the dumb bullshit that people are doing out here.
Facts.
In these streets. So, word. I gotta call out Kiki Palmer.
What did Kiki do?
So, she said, like, yo, someone online, like, oh, people on food stamps can host it can only buy healthy food, or something along that line. And then my thing is like this, yo. There's such thing as food deserts.
Yeah.
There's such thing as like people don't have access to healthy food. You know, when you live in areas that like it's a fast food place every other corner, even your healthy food places are high in stock and food that are not good for you.
Facts.
You know, or just canned goods, lack of fresh produce, lack of fresh meat. Meat is shipped all the way down from Wisconsin.
That's a fact.
You know, all these other things, it's kind of hard. You know, and I wish, too, that you ever been in the back in Walmart first in the month? You know, you already know man's got the food stamps.
Come on now.
And you see everything they got in that cart is unhealthy, even for the child. And you like, damn.
Yeah.
But I can't be mad at it because that's all they know.
But you know what? You might have had more money than me in your experience because my food stamp place of shopping was Save-A-Lot. Like I was eating Steakums when I knew that we was going to be, when it was food stamp time, it was mad Steakums.
Yo, I ain't going to hold you. I got on food stamps once in my life. And my mom told me that, I feel like I sunk to like a new low. I cried, bro.
Hey, I'm not going to hold you. While we here, real quick, one of the things that I got excited about the most as a young adult was food stamps because I was ready for my like rite of passage into discounted shopping. Like when I was in college and me and Don, because Don was my roommate, and when my sister was like, oh, y'all, you know, y'all qualify for food stamps. I'm like, we was both like, wait, what? Where do we go?
So let me tell you right now, I made too much money. For like food stamps. I am sick.
Hey, flex on me. Flex on me.
But at the same time, y'all don't ever think about ODB. He was a millionaire. He was still like, you know what I'm saying, taking his food stamps. He's like, it's free money.
Come Facts. On now. Archie's on to something.
Come on now. You know what? I love a finesse of the system.
Archie's on to something, man.
So yeah, that's my PSA. Like, we just gotta be, you gotta read the room and understand that even sometimes as us as black people, we still have privileges. You know what I'm saying? We have to understand those privileges and read the room. And I'm just very distasteful.
That's a fact.
Of her. Like, she's not totally canceled because, like, I rock with her. She a good dude.
And you can't cancel Kiki.
Bro. Yeah, she lit. Yeah.
People
she can't. She cannot act. Indeed, she cannot act whatsoever, but she lit.
Come on
you
now.
You feel me? Horrible actor. But.
Come on now.
We can't cancel like that.
You can't, man. You can't.
You feel me? But let's get into this, man.
Let's get into it. Well, first off, let me say this. I didn't prepare Don't Be a Dummy, and I apologize to y'all. So if actually we're getting straight into the interview, then that's even better. Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
All right. All
right. So, yo, Archie, man, just give us that background. Give the people, you know what I mean, the start, you know, of how you became Archie Green, bro.
Man, I really appreciate you guys having me on the podcast. I think I told y'all before we even hopped on, like, I was excited for this interview because, like, a lot of times, you know, I'm doing interviews with various media outlets and I can't get into some real nigga shit. You know what I'm saying? So like I was really excited to get, you know what I'm saying, to be on the Outrageous Podcast, man. So I just want to start with that. You know what I'm saying? I appreciate y'all. Hey. So as far as like how things started for me, you know, I feel like I was born to be a creative. So like, you know, I grew up in a small town, Chagrin Falls, for those listeners that don't know, very small, like about 40, 45 minutes outside of downtown Cleveland, predominantly white town. And, you know, I was like an outcast there. You know, I went through racism, I went through prejudice, that kind of thing. Yeah. You know, and my outlet was always, before it was rap, like I used to write stories, like, you know, and I'm gonna date myself here, but like I would put stories on floppy disk, and, you know what I'm saying?
Oh,
and
show them to my parents, wait, and stuff, Archie, like that. Hold on.
Hey, look, we was in like second grade.
Hey, yo, hey, I'll let you know right
wait,
now.
Hold on, Johnny.
A floppy disk gets you like 2 10-page papers.
Oh, wait, Archie, we love you here, right? But that was the first time I ever saw all three of us react to something at the same time.
Yo, what? I'm asking the floppy. No, not the USB drive.
Bro,
the floppy. Yeah.
Not even the CD. I thought he was going to say, like, oh, I used to put them on CDs, pass them out the trunk.
Yeah, no, because, like, if you see the little metal part over, all your stuff gone.
Hey, this is random. This is random, and we going to let you pick it right back up, Archie, but no cap, them floppy discs had some of the best computer games on them of all time.
Bro, you could get. Bro.
Yeah. Come on now.
Just the understanding that, like, you can only get, like, one or two good things on there.
But they was both good
things. I ain't gonna hold you. My grandma gave me a floppy disk, and I had all my little stuff saved. You couldn't tell me now. Shit.
The first floppy disk hustler. Archie Green.
Go ahead, my man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So like eventually, 98, I was 13 years old and I saw Jay-Z's Hard Knock Life video. And yeah, that was what inspired me to start rapping. You know, so like as soon as I seen that, I was like, oh man, that's what I want to do. Because I just knew I wanted to entertain. I wanted to be an entertainer of some sort. So I started writing raps when I was 13, and I was using my dad's old tape recorder. This is how I bootleg my shit was. So like I'd be in my parents' basement. I would turn the music or turn a beat on the speaker,
right?
And I would record it straight into the tape. So I ain't have like a computer. This was way before, you know, this was before even Cool Edit Pro. I was literally like just recording on my tape recorder and with the beat playing in the background, you know,
because no
I was
mix, just no so mastering. Excited.
Yeah, I was just excited, you know what I'm saying? Just to record something. And then like eventually my parents got me a PC and I started recording on the computer and started, you know, like basically taking instrumentals and putting together like albums. And like, you know, when I first started rapping, like my first rap name was G Money.
Like, wow.
Super original.
That was, yeah, original. That was like everybody's like, third grade. Oh, third grade. Yo. Name. Like, I just swore. Hey. I said I was D Money.
G Money.
Yo. What? No cap.
G Money.
I see why the outrageous interview only took 30 years to happen, because it wasn't going to happen in 98.
Yeah, man. G Money. And then like I went through a couple of different phases. Like it was G Money, then it was GFX with a Z, which didn't really make sense. And then
but I see the progression though.
Yeah.
As the education levels went up, he went up
for sure.
And then for me, like, since I grew up in the suburbs, like, you know, I changed my rap name to Burbs because, like, at that time, it wasn't a lot of rappers that were, like proudly proclaiming that they came up, you know, upper middle class or from the suburbs. Like, right. Everybody, you know how it was in those days. If you wasn't hood, you really didn't have the credibility to be called, you know, to be one of the best. You know what I'm saying? That's and then, facts. And you know, in 04 when Kanye dropped College Dropout, it was like, oh, I can actually be myself on the mic. I don't have to like, because when I first started rapping, I was talking about guns, violence, bitches and hoes, everything that I was hearing, because like I was influenced by Hov, Biggie, Nas, Lupe Fiasco, like those were the cats that I looked up to, like as far as being an MC. And then when Kanye dropped the College Dropout, like about, you know what I'm saying, like growing up in the suburbs like I did, you know, working in places like The Gap, stuff like that, like not about drug dealing, it was like, okay, I could actually be myself. And so like that's around the time I started going by Soul Clap with a K. So yeah. SOULKLAP. And that was like, for me, like this was blog era. So like this is like 08 through like 2010, 2011, like where I really, for me, I started getting into producing. And, you know, around that time, I also like started working with, I know y'all are hip to Mick. He used to go by Mick Boogie, but like, so back then he was Mick Boogie hosting mixtapes. So I started doing some stuff with him and Terry Urban back in the day. And I got known for my production, for my beats. Like I was remixing certain songs. I was making my own beats on my own albums. Like, and the biggest project that I did with Mick was this project called The Blue Throne, which came out. It was a mashup tape. It was all Blueprint acapellas and Kanye samples. So, like, samples from other Kanye songs. So, like, and we did it as, like, it was I think it was around the time that Watch the Throne had dropped, and it was the 10-year anniversary of The Blueprint. So like that was my big claim to fame as far as being a producer, you know. And so like eventually I started going by my government name, Archie Green. And that's when, like, you know what I'm saying, things for me as an artist, you know, I really started coming into my own. I think it's primarily because like I started really taking pride in my name. I ain't like I used to go by my middle name growing up, Lamont, you know, because me and my pops, we share the same name. And so when I started going by Archie Green, like, and really living in that, I started taking pride in it. It's my dad's name. It's my name. It's also my grandfather's name. And so, like, I feel like that was when, for me, like, the type of stuff I would talk about on Wax was, like, the real shit, you know? And that's what eventually led me to, you know, talking about my, you know, my life with depression, stuff like that.
So, can we... So, I low-key want to... That's actually... It's perfect that you brought that up. So... When we were doing our homework on you, we saw that you have really embraced being an artist that's transparent about, like, mental health and some of the battles that you've been having. Why I think that is important is for multiple reasons, because one is black men, we never really have those conversations. I'm not going to hold you. All three of us, me, myself, Johnny, and Don. Did I say me, myself? myself, Johnny, and Don. I think now we getting into a place in our friendships where it's like safe for us to have those conversations. But what made you feel so safe to have that type of topic and those type of conversations in your music?
Well, I think for me, I was inspired by artists like Cudi. You know, for him, since day one, you know, Cudi has always been very transparent about his demons, about depression and all of that. And I thought about all the greats at, you know, up until that point, like, that had gotten notoriety from really living and telling their truth. And for me, you know, like, so my story as far as how I started my journey into mental health, you know, it was around the time I had graduated from NYU. I went to Morehouse undergrad. I went to NYU to get my master's in music business. And around that time, I couldn't find a job. I ended up having to move back home. Like, I had broken up with my girlfriend, who was my fiance at the time. Like, it was a low period. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
That breakup is way worse than the regular breakup.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, around that time, you know, I had, when I had gotten back in town, and you know, real quick aside, I know that, that Johnny's an alpha. I'm a Q myself. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, like, no hate on this side. No hate on, you know what I'm saying? Especially now that the HBCs is going to the White House, you know what I'm saying? Come on, no shade at all. but around that time, one of my pro fights had hit me and was like, "Yo, why don't you come to the Frat House? We haven't seen." It'll be 6 years this month. They hit me up and it was like, "Yo, come to the Frat House, like, have a few drinks. You know, we haven't seen you since you've been back in town." So I went to the Frat House and you know how it is when you're around the bros, you just drink and it's more alcohol than Coke or ginger ale in the drinks, right? And all that. And yo, and when I tried to drive home, I got pulled over. I got a DUI. You know what I'm saying? Placed the handcuffs, the whole thing. Damn. You know what I'm saying? It was crazy because, like, that next day, my first ever music video was about to drop. So, like, it was the worst night of my life, and the next day, like, I'm promoting this new song and shit like
from
that.
The jail cell.
But yeah, and so that's what really catapulted me into, like, I had been depressed most of my life and didn't know it, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean before that, I had written, there was a point, because, like, when I was in high school, I had transferred out of Chagrin Falls, where I was the only black, to Solon, where, like, it was more diverse, there was other black kids. But because I had never really been around kids that looked like me, I didn't want to come off as corny. I didn't want to come off as, like, you know, like, you know, if you were articulate, like, niggas would be like calling you a punk and stuff like that. So, like, I didn't really know how to act, quote unquote. And so, like, that first semester was rough for me. So, like, I wrote a song about killing myself. You know what I'm saying? And it was something I kept to myself. I ain't share with nobody or anything, but it was like, this song about, like, man, like, if my own people don't like me and the white people don't like me, then why am I here? You know what I'm saying? And so, like, I had been depressed most of my life. But when I got, going back to the story of the DUI, when I got my DUI, like, and I could lost my license for a year and I'm confined to, you know, basically going to home, to my job and church. That's really all I could drive to. Like, I isolated myself. I started having suicidal ideation, you know, like, questioning, why am I here? Like, what would life be like if I wasn't alive and shit like that? And basically, you know, I had gotten to a point where, you know, the people around me started noticing, like, a change in my behavior. Like, I was,
in the bed, not really doing much, like gaining weight, like smoking, drinking, all kinds of bad shit. And another one of my fraternity brothers, who's a psychologist, had said, like, man, have you ever thought about going to therapy? And so, like, you know, because it was somebody that looked like me that said, like, yo, you should consider going to therapy. I didn't even give it a second thought. I was like, all right, you know, bet. Like,
but you
whatever.
Know that's
like,
crazy, though, is that the fact that when you tell people that, people, like, get offended really quick when you like, yo, yeah. You want to go to therapy, B? You been to therapy? You're like, Brian, crazy nigga.
right.
And then so Archie, real quick. So you said, that, you know, you, of course, you said you were depressed and all of that. So what kind of triggered that? I mean, in terms of you knowing that you're depressed, because some people don't acknowledge that they're depressed. They'll say, okay, I'm just a little sad or a little upset, but I'm going to get through it. So when did you like kind of realize it was depression rather than, okay, I just had a bad day or a bad couple of days?
That's a great question. You know, I think for me, it was like, I didn't know it was depression at that time. I hadn't been diagnosed or anything. For me, I knew, and the people around me knew that something was up, because it was like months. Like, it was like almost a year straight of me just not really being myself. Like, not really, like, it having subtle certain moments where I might, you know what I'm saying, I might be happy or whatever. But, you know, for the most part, I wasn't really doing anything socially. Like, I was just staying in my bedroom, you know what I mean? Staying on the couch all day. And I remember, the year that I started going to therapy, I remember that Valentine's Day, my sister and my girlfriend at the time, like they did this thing where they wanted to, you know, lift my spirits. And so like they surprised me and put all these post-it notes on my wall in my bedroom, all these positive affirmations and positive words about me as a person, as, you know, my character. And that really, it lifted my spirits, but I knew that something was up, because like, I think for me, the biggest trigger for me was Thanksgiving of that year. Like after my DUI, a year later, like I had, you know, we hosted, me and my sister hosted Thanksgiving. We was living together at the time. And after dinner, like I had to rush to my room because I was getting claustrophobic. You know what I'm saying? Like, or at least I thought I was. Really was, I was having a panic attack. Like my heart was going crazy. Like I couldn't control how I was feeling. And I knew, in order for me to control it, I had to be by myself. And it's like, I'm around my family. I'm around my, you know, my parents, my grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, all that. And like, I can't stand to be around them. So that's when like, I was like, you know what, I'm going to go to therapy, because like, this is something that's out of my control. Like or at least at that time, I felt like it was out of my control. And it was deeper than just having a bad day, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. For sure.
Do you know what though? Like, the thing about even just to step into this therapy bag real quick, you know, because as long as we have conversations on this show, you feel me? But, you know, even me going trying to get into therapy, it's so expensive, bro. Like, I say it's so expensive, but it's just like, it's not like going to a doctor where it's like, I go, my copay's a little less, we lit, I get in, get out. Like, it felt like it's so many humps to get to therapy, to find the right therapist, to... Do I want to go to a black man, black white man, black woman, white woman? You know what I'm saying? You don't know what flavor, what you going to do with it. And it also, too, it's kind of hard when, like, you know, knowing your family has ever went to therapy. Yeah. Everybody thinks that it's a bad stigma. You're crazy and stuff like that. Like, or even the fact that sticking with therapy, going and not going when something's wrong, going consistently, even going on your good days.
Right. Absolutely.
You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was fortunate, man. You know, my employer, they had a program. I basically used the employer assistance program to find my therapist. And the one thing I knew inherently was that I wanted a black male therapist. Like, I wanted somebody who could actually understand my point of view as a black man, because like, if I'm going to open up to you, if I'm going to tell you everything, like my demons, you know, things that people don't know, like I need to make sure like I feel comfortable talking to you. And so like for certain people, it might be a like, you know, I've talked to men who they would prefer a black female therapist because they didn't have a father growing up, you know, so they feel more comfortable speaking to a woman like a mother figure, you know what I'm saying? And so like I was lucky that I was able to find my therapist through the EAP program, you know what I'm saying? And the copays, they were manageable, you know, but you're absolutely right in terms of like, you know, therapy can get expensive depending on where you're going to. And, you know, the place that I go to, Hope Behavioral Health, it's a Black owned practice and they have locations, you know, throughout Northeast Ohio, what I'm saying? And I was fortunate again to have a Black male, and they have it's a diverse group in terms of the practitioners that are there. So like anytime people ask me like, man, you know, do you have anyone you recommend? I always send them to Hope Behavioral because like they save and change my life. You know what I'm saying? And the fact it's primarily Black therapists there, like, of course I'm going to steer people that direction.
Right. So then kind of rewinding time a bit. So how much of an impact do you think that living out in the suburbs of Chagrin Falls, because I'm very familiar with Chagrin Falls and being the only African-American out there, growing up the only African-American, and then making, we'll say, that school change to now you're around other African-Americans. What would you say that kind of effect that kind of had on you moving forward, like into your high school, which is, you know, very big and developmental, and then, of course, as an adult? But yeah, also what major. Kind of inspiration was it for you?
It was major, you know. I did have to get over that hump of being around kids, you know, that looked like me that I couldn't really relate to, at least initially. Like I had to get over that. You know, in full disclosure, I was also in Jack and Jill. So, you know, I wasn't one of the uppie shouts Jack out. And Jill niggas. Shouts out. I wasn't
one of them. Yo, Don was Jack either, and Jill kid. Yo, fam, wait, hold on. Fam. Shouts out.
Like, you know, certain people feel in some type of way about Jack and Jill.
Y'all some different type of people, bro.
No, everybody's not the same, though. That's the thing.
No, y'all some weird black kids.
We're going to talk about that offline. I would like Archie to answer my question.
No, Tom, I'm going to keep, yo, we going to roast you for this Jack and Jill.
No, because here's the thing. You know a couple people who were in Jack and Jill.
And they all weird.
Don said,
I'll drop you. You look, I ain't gonna drop no names, but they weird.
I don't name drop.
Hey, but you know what though? We gotta stop. But see, so I'm about to get on you.
Oh,
that's the problem. You are the fucking problem. Yeah. Johnny is the problem. And let me tell you why Johnny is the problem. Johnny is the reason why why I don't think that.
Fell into your fucking trap.
We feel like we can be.
Ourselves.
And Black people, for some reason, bro, in the Black community, in the Black world, if you have not struggled, if you are not coming from the bottom, we'd be like, nah, fuck out of here, son. You mad.
No. You're not gonna give me what you're not gonna do right now is hit me in that hole. No. Them niggas is pure weak. Like, I'm not saying that they ain't struggle. Dang, yeah, nigga. You ain't have to eat mashed potatoes off a fucking floor, motherfucker.
Niggas wasn't getting shot at on my block.
Them niggas just some weird ass niggas.
Yeah. I went to a Jack and Jill. The only thing is I did go to a Jack and Jill party one time. Son, my homeboy invited me. I'm like, yo, you got to step out if you go to Jack and Jill. I was overdressed as fuck. I was tight because I'm like, my mom was like, yo, put the Steve Madden's on, grab the cardigan. I'm like, damn, hey, yo, who is Chris?
Crispy, my nigga. Extra spray star. Yeah. Shoulder pads that's and that blazer crazy. Was going crisp.
Fam, I had no that's fucking idea who Jack crazy, and Jill yo. Was. So shouts out to Jack and Jill.
So you said you was in Jack and Jill, Archie. So how did that help assist?
Yeah.
If it so did anything it, at all?
For me, so I guess, you know, the main thing for me is, you know, because I knew Black kids who, because of their upbringing around like all white kids, like with just like, the type of niggas that don't even say, you know, give you the head nod when they walk past you in the hallway and shit like that.
Yeah.
I did not want to be that nigga. Like, I never wanted to be that nigga.
Yeah,
like, I can't stand niggas like that. I really can't. Like, bro, like,
he said,
when's the last time you looked in the mirror, my nigga? Like, seriously. So, like, for me, like, I had the desire to, like, want to be, you know, to want to be comfortable and around, you know, Black kids, you know what I mean? And so, like, eventually I just learned, again, from inspiration from people like Kanye and just also other friends that I made at school to just be myself, you know? And I was, you know, I was into the books and all that. Like, I remember I lettered in academics and, you know, band and choir. I always say I wasn't an athlete. I was a mathlete, you know what I mean? And And so I put academics on my jacket.
That's Archie. That might be why niggas said that you was weird. I'm not gonna hold you.
I'm not even gonna hold you. I say that proudly. I say that proudly. Yeah. I'd rather be weird than normal any day.
Shout out.
Straight up.
That's a fact. Straight up. That's a fact. The crazy. So, you know, I think I was having a moment, and which is crazy because these moments are so. I don't know if it's like our upbringing that makes us. Well, of course it is the things that we experience in our life that makes us the way we are. But even when I was looking at a relatively newer artist, not like a younger artist, I should say, not a new artist. But so I was looking at Uzi Vert, right? And Archie, I'm sure you know Uzi Vert. Don, everybody in here knows who Uzi Vert is. And Uzi is what I would consider, and from my experiences, very alternative, like alternative to everything that I've ever.
Okay.
And so when I saw it, I'm like, yo, son, why is he mad weird like this? Why do these kids love this
you
dude?
You know what? I can go even deeper.
What's up?
I had a hip hop conversation with a couple of my homies. And this is the group that I hate having hip hop conversations with.
Because
they don't know music. They don't listen to music.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, yo, Tyler Creator, like he's in my top 10, top 5.
Oh, Tyler's hard.
But people were like, yo, Tyler, that's
weird, son.
Yeah. Yo, he was talking about gay shit. I'm like, bro, what? Like he made it cool for black people to like skating, like to be different, to like use
for real
these different instruments in their raps, talk about love. Yeah. And then think about that also too, him actually coming out as like being, you know what I mean, gay or bisexual, whatever sexuality he identifies with, being that's like cool just to like be themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like for even for that, was that, but that was for real for me though. When I saw Pharrell's in a medium polo size next to everybody with extra large everything,
a fitting
for him to produce a trap, like a hip hop track, and also to be in a band like NERD and sing about certain things and rap about that, like be on the clips with there's some hood ass trap niggas.
Oh, them is some niggas, man.
Straight trap niggas.
You feel me? And for him to rap with them, but also to hop on, and his best friend is an Asian cat.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
Come on now, bro.
How do y'all, so to y'all, and this is something that I want to ask all of y'all, but do y'all feel like there's still that big barrier of you have to be a certain way in music for black artists?
I definitely, like at this point, any type of barrier entry has been broken down. Like you can literally be whoever the fuck you want to be. I believe I think the internet has really like, has created a world where, you know, whatever your niche is, whatever your shit is, like, there's somebody else out there like that's on the same shit that's going to connect with you. Facts. So I think you can really be yourself, whatever that is.
But you know what though? I think I kind of disagree with you, Archie. I think that depends on what type of success your goals are in a sense, because if you want to be that dude that is on the radio, you know, and it wants to get the stripper club spins, you feel me? And wants to get that mass quick fame. No, that's what it's called.
Stripper club.
Stripper club, you feel me? The booty club. Titty ball. Yeah. But if you want to get those spins, you have to have a certain type of dialect in your music. You got to talk about the drugs. You got to talk about the disrespecting women. You got to have this type of vibe. Yeah. But you can't be a Larry June. You know what I mean? Rapping how he raps and get that type of notoriety. Now, if you want to just make you a couple, maybe $1 million, a couple M's, do your thing. But if you're trying to get like
world renowned,
famous.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that's the differentiator there. I mean, I for sure agree with Archie, because I believe honestly that this world that we're now getting into is a lot more accepting. And I'm not necessarily saying, because, you know, people are going to say, okay, black, white, orange. But I'm just saying overall. Because, you know, if you think about it, 10, 20 years ago, we'll say even, you know, like gays and lesbians and all that, they weren't accepted at all. But now it's like we're here, we're working to accept all of that. So I think in terms of just strictly music, I think you're now on a platform where you can be a little more weird or whatever the case may be. And you'll be, people will listen.
Yeah. Each community is so massive now. Like, I don't believe there's a small, even the small communities still have massive fan bases.
Yeah.
Right.
And so
you got to know your audience too, though, to Johnny's point. If it's my goal to hit the strip clubs, which if I was a nigga from the A, like that's your goal. Like you trying to get your music played in the strip clubs, like Magic City, you know what I'm saying? That's when you know it's a hit. Yeah. You have to cater to that audience. You know what I'm saying? But it's different. It's different in every region. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
that
makes any sense.
What? So when you listen to, like, Don had brought up how, was it Don or Johnny? One of y'all had brought up how a lot of these, how artists, and I don't, not even just younger artists, but ever since rap has become what it has become so massive, we hear artists talk about a lot of the things that they experience, whether it's trauma, whether it's drugs, whatever, in their music. As somebody that's big on mental health and music, how do you listen to things and separate them? Or how do you hear songs and be like, damn, yo, homeboy going through it? Or do you hear songs and be like, all right, it's just music, so I'm just going to take it as music?
It depends. I mean, I think there was a time where, like, I wasn't really listening to ratchet music at all. Like, I was one of the, you know, I was kind of one of them niggas, oh, that's not real music. Mumble rap is not real music, whatever. And then eventually I sat down and I started listening to the Uzis, the Yachtys, like all these cats. Because again, at that time, you know, they were like ruling the charts. And it's like, when you listen to some of these cats, like they're telling real stories. Like, especially with the drug rap, like not talking about selling drugs, but using drugs. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to talk about XXX, or if you want to talk about
Juice WRLD.
Juice WRLD. Like them cats was traumatized. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And you can hear it in their raps. You can hear it the way that Juice would sing in these songs. You know what I'm saying? And then I'll listen to cats like G Herbo, you know, PTSD, like where he's talking about, like, I saw an interview where he was like, he thought it was normal to like always have a gun on him. Like he didn't think that that was because of trauma. He didn't think that that was because, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, so these cats are telling real stories. And nowadays you can tell when a nigga lying or when a nigga is telling the truth.
That's when
cats are telling the truth, that's one of the essential forms of hip hop is truth and rap, you know, telling the truth, whether it's good, bad, or ugly.
I'm not going to lie to y'all. I think every nigga that rap and is from Chicago is telling the truth about whenever niggas blow up from Chicago,
But you know what, David? I even expressed this to, like, me and Dev have had debates and discussions about this. Like, I really don't even like where hip hop is going right now.
In a sense, mainstream.
I listen to a lot of West Coast hip hop. That's my vibe right now. I'm on a very big West Coast vibe right now. But when it comes to mainstream hip hop, I don't like how it's become cool to be a junkie. And it's just, but also too, and I read Rick Ross's book. I read Great Book. And then I read Gucci's book. And just them not even knowing that they were, and I hate to say the word junkie, but that's how the word I was raised up on. But but like they're addicts, ass addicts. Mm-hmm. And then one time it was funny because I was telling my friend, he was like, "Yo, like these niggas pop perks and anything. Like these niggas addicts. They sell. They using dope." He said, "No, it ain't the same. You can't tell me the same high on heroin and perks the same." I said, "Nigga, it's a fucking opiate. It's the same thing. He ain't shooting it up."
Like, ass nigga, man.
Just because he's popping it in his mouth like Skittles and he'll make it cooler. Yeah,
that's a fact. That is a fact. Yeah, and then it's crazy because it's like so many artists that, like, even artists that I like that you wouldn't expect. Like, I know Meek was dealing with that for a long time, bro.
One of the greatest battles in hip hop.
During that,
he was high as a kite and lost.
Yeah, that's wild. I don't know, man. This is what I think when it comes. Drugs is always going to be in music heavy because I feel like so much of them, because it's so inspired by music.
But is it because we're raised on drugs and raised on like violence and being in prisons and jail? Like, not even saying raised on it, but like, think about this, bro. Like, if you ask somebody, ask all four of us, can you close your eyes and do you know somebody on drugs, in jail, or has committed a violent crime?
And we could all say yes.
So I'll say that kind of where you started but you didn't want to go is that, lack of better terms, and it's unfortunate, we were raised on it. And I'm not saying directly raised on, like, everybody necessarily didn't have, you know, a mother or a father or a brother or sister who were on drugs, but somebody in your family was on drugs. And it's in our communities. So when they're rapping about it, like we were saying about being the truth, that's just what their reality is. That's what they see. Their dad might have been a drug dealer. Their mom might have been a drug dealer. For example, DeAndre Hopkins. They had a E60 about him. His mom was selling drugs, and he was helping. He and his sisters.
Wow.
He told me this story.
His mom had went blind because her dude's side piece threw bleach and stuff on her face. So she went blind. So she was selling coke and all that stuff out the house. Right. And they used to count the money when people was coming in. Hey, so I mean, he ended up going to play football, but if he started rapping about it, that was his reality.
Hey, Dev, she should have called the crack Stevie Wonder. Johnny's a fucking...
He is notorious for taking a good story.
And it's also...
You get so high you couldn't see it.
I hate this.
In their defense, though, the rappers that talk about drugs, and the reason why rappers have been talking about drugs since day one, it's escape from our reality. It's self-medication. You know what I mean? Like, any way I can temporarily take myself out of this hell that's life in America, you know what I'm saying? As a black man, black woman, like, where I don't have to, you know, think about the fact that police is killing us and, you know what I'm saying, we're still looked at as inferior, like, you know, I just want to go somewhere where I don't even have to think about that shit. That's why niggas take drugs and become addicted to that shit.
That's
so they can get out of it. You know what I'm saying? At least temporarily. That's it's not healthy. It's not right. But it's what they have in front of them. And it's and in their minds, and this is part of the reason why, like, I do what I do as far as mental health. Like, in their minds, they don't know of any other way to cope or to get through that pain. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What are some when you talk about coping, I think so you have it's so many different lanes that we could literally tap in with you and interview you from and ask questions from, because you do so many different things, which is why you was the 2000 was it 18 or 16
Cleveland
18 yeah.
Put some respect on this nigga.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
A motherfucker with a resume.
Yo, but so when you talk about coping, and then I want to transition into something else after this, but when you talk about coping and coping mechanisms, how in your music do you address coping and coping mechanisms? Because I'm not going to lie to you. We could say those words all day, but a lot of people really have no idea what they are and how to find out what they are.
Yeah, I mean, so like, you know, in full transparency, I'm actually working on my next album. It's called Voicemail. And in this album, like, I talk about some of the traumas that we as black men face, you know, that really a lot of rappers, you know, may not feel comfortable to talk about on rap, whether you're talking about, you know, the self-medicating, you know, sexual abuse that you may have gotten in your own family, like, and other types of trauma. You know, the type of things that I talk about as far as how to heal is one, to talk about it, to not hold that in. Because you're not the only person going through that. Plus, there's healing, and it's just like what Hov said, you can't heal what you don't reveal.
Come through,
you
know, with the Hov bars.
Like,
man.
Come on, man. Like, you have to talk about it. But the other thing is, like, a lot of times when I'm talking to, you know, when I'm talking to people about coping with mental illness, is, you know, there's certain things you can do. Like, for me, meditation, like, you know, meditation is a huge coping mechanism that I use daily. You know what I'm saying? And I know, like, a lot of cats, I know y'all heard Big Sean's new album, you know, on tracks like Zen the Fuck Out, like, talking about, like, elevating self, you know, going within to kind of quiet and calm the mind,
yeah.
You know, to also quiet and calm those demons, you know, whatever it is, you know, that's hindering you or bringing darkness to you, you know. But the other things that you can do is, like, exercise, you know, eat healthy foods or eat foods that are not going to weigh you down as much, because a lot of times, you know, that's another form of self-medication. We, you know, we eat, you know, to kind of basically, I'm trying to think, comfort food. Yeah. We have comfort food, like comfort, whether it's fast food or, you know, cakes or whatever, like, so we don't feel as bad, you know, with everything that we're going through. It's better to eat healthy foods because, you know, it's corny as it sounds, you are what you eat, you know what I'm saying? And so, like, those are some of the things that I, you know, I always talk to other black men about. And that really, my mental health awareness organization, Pilgrim Layers Back, like, our mission is to actually talk to black men and boys, because we're the hardest eggshell to crack when it comes to talking about and opening up about our problems. And so, like, one of the other major things I talk about in my raps and talk in conversation is breathing exercises, like, especially with anxiety, like when your heart rate is going crazy and you feel like you're about to be outside of your body, just close your eyes, put your hand on your heart, put your other hand on your stomach, and just take 3 deep breaths. It really helps you to calm down. Those are things that if you don't know how to use those things, you're going to go for the closest thing, whether it's drugs, alcohol, women, violence, whatever it is, to kind of let out that pain, that trauma.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, and also I want to dive, since we've been the hip hop bag a little bit too. Can you respond to something like this, that event, My Violent Ways, a ton, yo? Because that was like a big event, a big thing for you.
Yeah. So this was probably about 15 years in the making, like 10, 15 years in the making. So my first exposure to like hip hop and orchestra was when Ye came out with Late Registration. And then did y'all see that Late Orchestration thing that he did? That
concert? Come on now.
You saw some real hip hop niggas on
here. Hey, the Rocka Boys was in the building that night.
You feel me? Come on now, put some respect on us, man.
The Rocka Boys was, I'm not a business, man.
This is again why I'm so happy to be on this podcast. So many people like that I've talked to are not hip. But anyway, that was my first exposure to seeing like, you know, a MC like rapping with like with strings and an orchestra. And I was blown away by that. And then, you know, Hove did the thing at Carnegie Hall. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was super dope. But when Nas did the whole Illmatic album with an orchestra, I was like, oh, this shit is amazing. I have to bring this to Cleveland. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't even necessarily know if I was going to be the MC to be on stage with an orchestra. But I just knew I wanted to bring that experience to Cleveland. So fast forward to 2018, towards the end of 2018, I ended up applying for this grant through Cuyahoga Arts and Culture, where we learned how to work with nonprofits. It was myself. It was 12 artists and 12 nonprofits. And we just basically learned how to do these projects together. And at the end of the training, we had to choose which nonprofit we wanted to work with. And for me, I knew I wanted to work with youth. So like I partnered with the Lexington Bell Community Center based in Huff. And with these kids, like age between 4 and 14, the main reason why I wanted to work within the Cleveland Metropolitan School District was because of the suicide rates there. I mean, I don't know if y'all know, but there was a time, like 2017, there was a study that came out that CMSD was number one in the nation in suicide rates. Wow. So like
I never knew that.
Two in every 10 high schoolers had attempted suicide at that time. You know what I'm saying? And so like with me working with these kids, but you know, right before they hit high school, like it was a chance for me to kind of give them an alternative form of outlet of expression, you know, but I wanted to give them something familiar. So like I wanted to blend the worlds of hip hop and classical music. And so like they had these classical guitars that they would use as instruments. So I was like, I hit up the Cleveland Classical Guitar Society and I set up guitar lessons. And so like it was always my idea. We're going to teach them how to play hip hop music on guitar. So like originally I wanted them to play like I think it was like it was a couple Nas songs like from the orchestra concert that he did. But of course, when I asked the kids what they wanted to play, it was like, we want to do Old Town Road. So like, of course.
Like, hey, y'all know about the rest of y'all. I'm so tired of that song. Yeah.
So we taught the kids how to play Old Town Road, and then I helped them to write their own version of the song. You know what I'm saying? So like we were doing songwriting workshops and we were taking them on field trips. We were basically addressing social anxiety, acts of kindness, and getting the parents involved in what they were doing. And so like at the end of this project, we were going to put a concert together. Now, mind you, at this time, I still wanted to bring hip hop to Severance Hall, but I didn't know how I was going to do it. So I come to find out that they already had a relationship with the orchestra. In fact, the guitars that these kids was learning how to play Old Town Road on was donated from the orchestra.
Damn.
So I basically, I, it was God, it was definitely divine intervention. So like I hit up the community engagement people over at the orchestra, like, yo, like, we're trying to do this concert with these kids, you know, at Severance Hall. And I was kind of getting like, I wasn't getting pushback, but it was really, it was no traction there. You know what I'm saying? And so like part of, and this is the one thing, like I, you know, and again, I'm so glad to be on this podcast, like to talk to the artists out there. Like if you trying to, if you're trying to get in the door of a venue that has never seen a rapper or anything, you need to make sure you know who is in the building and who exactly, who precisely you need to talk to. Real so shit. Like for me, I knew like, and anybody from Cleveland knows the most diverse concert in the orchestra is the MLK concert. Of course. Everybody know like, okay.
That's the only day you see black folks pull up for the Severance Hall.
We're going to see some black folk in the orchestra. It's going to be on MLK Day, right? Like for that
they're
concert.
Not paying for parking.
Exactly. Right.
I used to hate them days, so, bro.
So like I knew one of the people on the board for putting that concert together with the orchestra. So I reached out to him, and he's also African American. And I reached out to him, and I was like, I have this idea, like not just talking about like how it would be cool, but what it would also do for diversity and inclusion and arts and culture here in Cleveland. You know, like that's the other thing I want to tell people is like, when you're trying to do something major like this, understand it's bigger than you. So when you're trying to open that door, that don't pitch yourself. Pitch what this event, how this is going to impact the community. And that's what major, I did. Bro. And so like he basically pressured the orchestra. And that's really after that, man, it was all the finesse. You know what I'm saying? It was like coming in meetings, you know, like no. I mean, and that's when I attribute like. That's one of the positives growing up in Chagrin Falls. I know how to code switch, and I know how to talk polite and make sure to get my point across for all these white folks. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it was major finesse, but in the end, we were able to secure the venue. We got donations. You know, we were able to pay. They gave us a discount. And we sold the concert out. It was over 300 people in the Reinberger Chamber Hall.
Oh, it was definitely going stupid in the parking lot.
I mean, bruh, it was lit. Like the kids sang Lift Every Voice and Sing. Bro. They did their Old Town Road.
Come on now.
And then I came out with my own chamber ensemble. Like I came out there with like and Hove inspired me. I had the white dinner coat on and shit.
Come on now.
You know what I'm saying? Like
talk your shit, King.
You know what I'm saying? And then after at the end of the concert, we did a tribute to Nip. Like I came back out with this Nipsey Hussle T-shirt on, and we, you know, we played a quote from Nip at the end of the concert when I did this song called Black Excellence. It was a real. I wanted to make sure I represented us, man.
Do you
like
have
hip hop culture?
Do you have a video or like any clips of that you could send to us?
Yeah, I can see. I actually, we did it. We shot a documentary. So, like, I'll send y'all. It's on you. It's on YouTube.
Come on,
man. Yeah. Come on.
I got something better. Come on.
I'm like, bro, they may not let us do this again. I got to make sure, like, I'm doing this shit. Like,
you might be the first and last nigga in that day.
Like, you know what I'm saying? And the other part that I would tell you that really made me feel good about it, because what inspired me to do it at the orchestra also was, like, when you go to the orchestra, like, pretty much everybody who greets you from the parking garage to the fucking elevators to the concessions is all black people. It's like, it feels like a slave. It feels like slave quarters or some shit. You know what I mean? And then when you get to the actual concert, it's all white people in the audience. And so like, I really wanted to change that. I wanted to bring in as many black folk as possible, but also to show the people that are working there, like, look what we can do. Look what we can do in these walls. You know what I'm saying? It's our music. It's our culture. And that was something I was really proud of as well.
Yeah.
So with all that you did with the kids, you know, of course, you know, going to Severance, you know, making the documentary and all of that, how big do you think that it was for one, the community, but how big do you think that needs to be in other communities, not just in Northeast Ohio, but around the country?
Oh man, I mean, you know, as far as the impact, I mean, you know, like after the concert happened, I mean, I remember like me and my wife was invited to the gala for the orchestra. Like we were guests of the CEO. Like we sitting at, you know what I'm saying? We mobbing with with niggas that run the Playhouse Square and all these other major, like I met Jimmy Haslam that night, like a fucking billionaire. First time I ever met a billionaire. And then I met Jim Brown and his wife that night. Like, so I already knew, still like, kicking. You know what I'm saying? If we're getting invited to the gala and we sitting at the chairman's table, I knew that it was a major impact. You know, I got invited to a board meeting at the orchestra to talk about the vision for it. I definitely want to do it again. You know what I mean? But of course, with COVID, it's going to be a while. But as far as taking that to other communities, I mean, I think the most important thing to me was to introduce a new form of expression for these kids that live in the inner city.
That's
these
big.
Kids who, you know, they hear gunshots at night. In the summertime, they're lucky if they have food in the fridge. You know, they're told that they ain't gonna be shit. They don't have parents that are at home, you know, keeping eyes or keeping watch over them. So like, instead of, you know, them going down the same road as some of their, you know, their parents or older siblings, whether it's drugs, alcohol, whatever, let me pick up an instrument. Like, I wanted to change their frame or their mindset on the violin or the classical guitar. Like, yo, I played Old Town Road. That shit is dope. Cause you know, if it's hip hop, then all of a sudden it flips it on its head. Cause that's the thing about hip hop culture is like, it's the coolest shit ever. It's the most impactful and influential genre in the world, period. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so using that's why I use hip hop culture with all that I do within mental health. So it's definitely something I want to take to other communities. But it's happening. It's happening in certain, I know Atlanta, they had something like that. I can't remember the organization that put it together. It's happening in certain areas. And then like you have, I don't know if y'all are familiar with Miguel Atwood Ferguson, a suite for Mod Dukes was like a J Dilla orchestra type deal. They did that. There was another cat. There's a couple conductors that did all these Kanye joints with a full orchestra. Like it's happening.
That's hard.
Just, you know, and that's all shit I want to bring here, you know, and eventually, you know, hopefully I'll be in a position to do that.
Yeah,
that's what's up. So that's like segue back to your nonprofit. Peel the layers back, right?
Peel them layers back.
Got right. you. Can you just give us some like what the work you're doing with that? Because just even just hearing like you talk about, you're talking to black males, you know what I mean, about mental health and peeling those layers back. Because you know, obviously we're raised to be hard, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That we're raised to be tough. We're raised to not show emotions. We're raised to just deal with life's punches and just take them, you know, right. And either just take the punches per se, or just even from just really no way to deal with it, just to deal with it. Or even me, sometimes I get caught up in that phrase of it's life. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
When shit ain't okay. So you just expound on your nonprofit and stuff like that too.
Sure. So my nonprofit Peel Them Layers Back was birthed from a song I wrote called Layers, which I premiered at Vice. It was, they were doing a series on different rappers talking about depression and rap. Mm-hmm. And I had just written the song, and shout out my nigga Will Cooper. He's from Strongsville. He was also like, he's one of my best friends. And he was working at Vice at the time. He hit me. He was like, yo, do you have any songs about depression? I was like, I do, actually.
Don't mind if you got a collection of them.
I do, actually.
What you on your own? Sunday depression or Saturday depression?
Yeah. And, you know, and the song went viral. You know, it got like 25,000 streams in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And so for me, that was a sign to me that this is something important. Like, I you know, we've heard from Grandmaster Flash, Furious Five, The Message. We've heard niggas talk about depression, but as far as talking about going to therapy or healing through therapy, that was something that was a little more rare. It wasn't really talked about. So like, you know, when that song went viral, like I was like, man, this is something I should start talking about. So like at that time I was working, I had a 9-to-5 and all that, quit my job. I put my all in my music. My then girlfriend, my now wife, she supported us, like, you know, was paying the bills and just telling me to chase my dreams and try to make things happen. you know, she, yo, and that's another thing for all the artists listening, have a support system, that shit, so you can focus on your music. That is a priceless thing to have, and I'm forever grateful to my wife, my queen, for doing that. But at the same time, like, it was a situation where, you know, after I had gotten all these accolades and the song had blown up, and I remember around the time Cudi did his letter about going to rehab, like, mm-hmm. I had media outlets like BBC News reached out to me, like they wanted to talk to me about, because it wasn't a lot of rappers talking about therapy and music. And so, like, that's what inspired me to start my organization. I just wanted to start educating our people on therapy to help normalize the conversation. So, like, you know, when it's like a group of four black men like us just talking about sports or talking about hip hop or whatever, we can also talk about, man, let me tell you what I was just talking to my therapist about. Like, and it be normal, not like, nigga, what you talking about? You went to therapy. Is you crazy?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, to change the conversation around that. So my approach, our approach to that is totally unconventional. Everything we do has to have a touch of hip hop. It has to be through a hip hop lens because it's in my DNA. It's how I live. It's how I dress. It's how I talk. Like, it's who I am. And so, like, my approach, and plus, if we keeping it a buck, the way that things were before, like, niggas was looking at mental health like, oh, it's all white doctors and the shit that I don't understand. If you put it in a way that niggas understand, then it's like, oh, I can apply it to, because it's a rapper talking about it, not just in records, but he's talking about how he lives with this shit, I can apply that to myself. You know what I'm saying? So, like, anytime I put on a panel discussion, it's all black therapists or black mental health professionals. I had my pastor come out to one of my panel discussions to dispel the myth that the church and therapy can't coexist. Like, you know, because we always tell each other, like, pray it away or talk to Big Mama about it, or, you know, just be tough. You know what I'm saying? Whatever. Like, nah, my pastor goes to therapy too. Like, she's done sermon series on anxiety. You know what I'm saying? So our approach to doing that is also doing events like My Violent Weighs a Ton, you know, where we come up with an innovative as well as unique program that's fusing hip hop with another genre, but also addressing mental health and the work that we're doing with youth. So, like, go ahead.
I want to ask you this question, Archie. And I'm also want to ask Don and Johnny the same question. I want y'all to answer as well. But who do y'all think is more open to taking care of themselves mentally, black men or black women?
Black women. That's my answer. Black women.
Why do you say that?
I think because just women in general are more in touch with their emotions and more willing to express how they feel. You know what I'm saying? Like, as opposed to a lot of times, black men, we internalize, we suppress, we don't talk about it. We kind of keep it to ourselves. Like, it's been times I'll perform my song Layers in front of other black men, and you can see in their eyes that they want to tell you their pain, but they don't know what to say. They don't feel comfortable. Whereas, like, whenever I do my mental health events and it's an open mic, women jump on the mic. That they can't wait to express and tell what type of problems they're going through. And that's just a natural thing for women. Women are more expressive in that way.
Bruh,
that's my answer.
And the reason why I know that's so true is because literally I was making this joke about my girl the other day, and I was like, if it's one thing you gonna do, you gonna talk about it. It's just like, you damn right I'ma talk about it. And I'm like, me, I'm like, nah, I'ma let this simmer a little bit.
but you know what though? I agree with Archie, bro. Like, when it comes to black men, like, it's our culture not to express ourselves. Like, bro, like, the more you express, the weaker you are.
Yeah.
You feel me? Especially in terms of just, like, in violence. You know, like, think about me. Think how many fights, even all four of us, think how many fights could have been prevented if we niggas just talked some shit out.
Yeah.
Like, just get a bitch as a misunderstanding or, like, all the other shit. Also, too, like, just we just raised to be like, yo, like, nah, don't cry. Toughen it up. You feel me? I tell people all the time, I tell people, like, yo, you can cry, just don't cry with your head down. Cry with your head up. You know what I'm saying? Because I'd rather you see the road to your success or
come
whatever
through
you
with
see.
The,
you know what I'm saying? So you look down bars. Upon it. Real talk.
Yeah.
It's real shit. You know what I'm saying? It's like, but it's never bad to cry. You feel me? Right. Now, I ain't gonna hold you. I'm saying this too, but I'm a contradiction. I do not like a woman cry. It's weird to me. I ain't gonna hold you. Cause, yeah. But I was raised by a single black mother, yeah. And I never saw her cry. I just start seeing my mom be emotional. It's, wow. Shit weird. It's the weirdest shit ever.
Oh, no, fam. My mom's just crying every week.
My mom called me depressed and like, yo, Johnny, I'm sad. What the fuck you mean you sad? Yeah. What you talking about, yeah. Nigga? Yeah. You can't be sad. Mm-hmm. You mama.
Yeah. Facts. You mama. You can't be sad. Right. No, but I completely agree. Black men, we compartmentalize a lot. You know, we tuck it away. We're not gonna talk about it. We'll try to let it go. I mean, we're not letting it go because you're compartmentalizing it, so you're not dealing with it.
Yeah.
So a lot of things we don't deal with, and then they either explode, whether it's via violence, like Johnny was talking about, or drugs, like Archie was talking about, and drinking and all of that. Mm-hmm. So we get into like those coping mechanisms just because we're not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
But like, and it's hard for black men to go to the doctor. Like, I'm going to be real. I am notorious. I will not go to the doctor.
Nigga Don's ankle was sticking out of his
leg. No, I'll go get like fit, but like if I'm caught, like let's say not pre-COVID. If I'm coughing, I'm like, we're the tussing.
Hey, yo, I ain't gonna hold you. Hey, yo, what I'm gonna say is about to be probably the biggest pause of my life, bro.
What?
I'm the only dude, for real. If I go in the doctor's office and nigga don't, like, check me up and down and jiggle my balls, I ain't feel like I can get a good physical, bro.
If you don't grab your meat, then it's not thorough enough.
Like, real talk, I ain't gonna hold you, bro. If the doctor just walks out and tell me not to strip down, bro, I feel like
if he don't slap your ass, it's not thorough enough.
Fill me up, my nigga. Because it might be a lump that I ain't never seen before.
Nigga, Johnny said, I've been real stiff in my back lately.
Yo, my nigga, yo, what's going on, my nigga? Yo, no cap.
Real shit, I'll tell, this is a, so Archie, we always say we the most transparent podcast, right? And so we got to live up to that. And so I'm going to live up to that in this moment. It was Don's last year of college. I was a junior. Don was a senior. Crazy thing is, funny story, the whole time I thought I was a senior too. Rude awakening. But when Don and I was graduating, we turned up real hard. You know how that graduation week is. We turned up.
Yeah.
And then I'm on this couch, man. And I start crying, bro. And really over, like it was over things, but the thing that triggered it was so small. Like, niggas was like, all right, y'all, I'm about to go to bed. And then I was like, really? And I lost it. But there was like 4 years of shit that I waited to cry about until this one fucking moment, bro. And that shit is mind blowing to me when I sit back and think about now, like how more open I am to having conversations. But versus then, I was like, nah, I'm gonna hold this shit in. And as soon as niggas went to bed, I lost my shit.
Keep it being. I'm even going deeper with you, bro.
What's up?
So November 4th is my suicide anniversary date. Yeah. You know what I mean? November 4th, 2014, mm-hmm. when I tried to commit suicide. But it's crazy because, wow. When I look back on my life, I feel like the after I try to commit, was like the most fucked up time of my life. Yeah. Not going up to it, the afterward, because I'm like, damn, nigga, you trying to kill your fucking self. You a bitch. Like, in my head, I'm thinking that whole same thing. I'm like, bro, niggas understand, or like, couple motherfuckers is like checking up on me when my family's like not really taking this serious. Like, or like, yo, niggas stop checking in on me. Not feeling like I need someone to check up on, but it's like, damn. I know if it was in the psych ward weeks ago, like, nigga, the calls ain't coming in. Like, mm-hmm. Or even when they call me, like, not even saying, how you been? How you doing, bro? It's just weird. Yeah. It was a weird time, bro. And I think it hit me like towards the summertime. I'm like, bro, like, I'm fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, even though I know I got the whole suicide thing, like, I'm alive, I'm well, whoop-de-whoop. But I'm like, bro, I start realizing, like, okay, this Wellbutrin's not working. This Abilify's not working for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do I need to start going to therapy? How do I cope with shit?
Yeah.
All right, boom. Do I need to start having, not really talking to myself on some schizophrenic shit, but like on some, like, having those inner conversations, like, what triggers you?
Yeah.
Okay, boom. I know that women talking to me crazy triggers me.
Yeah.
Money triggers me. Okay, how can I fix, not in sense fix my triggers, mask them, but how can I better cope with my triggers? You know what I'm saying?
Manage. Little shit like that. Yeah, techniques
like that and all that
stuff.
No,
that's major, bro. Like, that's, well, first of all, you know, that's major, and you should definitely feel proud of yourself for even being that open to talk about, you know, the fact that you attempted suicide and that you're still here. But like, that is one major thing, is knowing what your triggers are is a major thing. And so, like, one of the things, you know, just touching on, like, the fact that you said, like, nobody really reached out to you, or it's primarily because a lot of times we don't understand, like, and I'm talking about we as Black people, we don't really understand how to approach someone who's going through something. So like one of the things that I did earlier this year was I got mental health first aid certified. So like for, you know, for those that don't know what that is, that basically is a certification that I can basically serve as an intervention for someone who may be suicidal or someone who has schizophrenia or whatever before going to an actual professional therapist. And so like what one of my goals, one of my initiatives, my organization is to get like over the next year, 500 African Americans mental health first aid certified.
Let's get it
for
done.
That reason. So like, you know, when someone else is going through that shit or when they're feeling suicidal, like we're not afraid to like approach them. We know how to kind of how to ask the right questions, how to not judge and all that, even within yourself. And if I may, y'all, like I wanted to spit some, like, it's actually some, it's going to be on my new album.
It hell yeah. It
touches on.
You need the ball. So hell yeah.
That, it's now, cool. AC, I want to.
Now we potted.
Y'all with some ball.
Now we potted. Hell yeah. Are you ready right now?
I'm ready right now.
Fuck yeah. All right, hold on, man. Hold on, yo. A lot of you other niggas, y'all not podcasting like we podcasting over here at Outrighteous, man. Y'all don't have the guests that we have over here at Outrighteous, man. Y'all don't have Archie Green in here talk about mental health, talking about nonprofit work, talk about the kids, talk about the future, hey, yo, talk about on, black men. Come on, man.
Archie's what's up? Not the first rapper we've had here. And he's probably the first rapper to ever rap on a podcast.
And he's the very first fucking rapper to ever come on here and spit some shit.
No shade to y'all other rappers that came on.
No, hella shade to all of these other rappers that came on to this podcast.
I'm gonna just shut up.
Hella shade. All right, Archie. We're ready when you ready. I'm gonna shut the fuck up and you just go ahead and do what you do, all right?
Bet. So this song is called Too Many Funerals. I'm just gonna spit a couple bars from this. Too many funerals I've been to in the last two. Too many hashtags up in my view. Too many tattoos. If I miss you, can't lie, most was just some issues of the body and the mind. Why you ain't smiling? Ain't you fine? Yeah, I'm fine, but I'm lying. Cause inside, I'm really dying. I should be crying, and I'm trying, but my uncles made it clear living life in denial was the way we was raised, passed down in emotion. A manual of how to smack down your emotions. Suffer in school, mad, easy to provoke them. Look at me wrong, I bring the smoke and it's potent. Solid exterior, but inside I'm broken. Smile to keep from crying myself, a Franklin Ocean. That's why I'd rather die than to face my emotions. But you probably wouldn't know, you really don't know. Why is it that he don't let no woman hold him? He wasn't ready to be a man when his auntie first showed him. Fast food, trash food, equates to trash mood. When he looks in the mirror, he only sees a trash dude. So when you ask why it is I got an attitude, my first reaction is probably just to laugh at you.
Talk damn. Your fucking shit. Talk your okay. shit.
Damn.
Some bars.
Talk your bars. Bars. Hold on, wait. I just want to acknowledge the part where he said you raised, and tell me if I'm wrong, Archie, but you said we get the manual to smack down your emotions. Was that what you
That's
said?
That's right. Yeah. Yo,
that shit hit yeah. home.
Yeah. Yo. Hey, you know, hey, yo, no, Cat, when he said about the uncles,
yeah.
Yo.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yo. That shit is, hey, come on, man. The very first artist come on here and spit some real shit, some important shit. Archie fucking yes, Green. Sir. Make sure y'all get the name right.
Yes, sir.
We had an hour and 14, and we know that you have a schedule that you got to keep tight. So before we conclude this podcast, man, I have one random question for you. And it's not really random because it is something that we've been talking about, but it was something that's very important that I think that the three of us, Johnny, Don, and myself, and then the people that listen to us, I think it's something, this question is something that I want them to be aware of as well. But you had mentioned that Cleveland CMSD was at number one in the suicide attempts or suicide rates, or we were really climbing that
yeah,
chart,
we
right?
was yeah, suicide rates, yeah.
And so when I think about these bars that you just spit for us and how you addressing that, how real is suicide? How real of a threat? Because when we were looking at your website, the wording was so important that you were using, but you call suicide a disease. So how real is that suicide threat for the Black community right now?
It's major, man. I mean, to be Black in America is traumatic. Mm-hmm. There is a weight that comes with being Black, period. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't turn on the news. You can't scroll through your social media without seeing, you know, another black man, a black woman being gunned down or arrested, you know, falsely accused or whatever the case may be. And so that shit weighs on you. The more that you ingest that, that's why, like, another coping mechanism for me is turning my fucking phone off.
Come on,
getting off of social media, watching something that is positive and empowering for black people to lift my spirits up. Because if the last thing I look at night is, you know, a man being assassinated by a police officer with his knee on his neck, how's that going to make me feel? It's going to make me feel inferior. And so when you start to feel inferior and you start to feel like shit, then you stop caring about your life. You stop caring about yourself. And so you start doing toxic things to yourself. And as far as suicide being a disease and being really what suicide is, it's the last ditch effort for someone who is going through a mental illness to want to take back control. So like when you're depressed, when you're anxious, when you have anxiety, there's all these thoughts that are clouding your mind that you seemingly do not have control of. And so what you really want is you just want to be in control. And so when you're in that low state, the one thing that you can think of to be in control is to turn all that shit off by killing yourself. That's your way of, all right, well, I know one way that I can take control of my life by taking my life. So it is something, and I don't believe in calling it committing suicide. I believe it calling the phrase succumbing to suicide or succumbing to mental illness, because at the end of the day, it wasn't your choice. Like, you felt like this was the only thing that you could do to be in control. And so like, that's why it's so important to go to therapy or to at least have various coping mechanisms that you utilize on a daily basis, whether again, it's the breathing, it's the meditation, it's the eating, but even I'm an avid playlister. I have playlists that I go to that I make. Like, I got a playlist for my organization called Mind Playing Tricks on Me. And it's a bunch of like hip hop records talking about being depressed and talking about getting through that shit. Yeah. I listen to that. Like, when I'm in that mood, it helps me feel better because like I'm able to just blare that shit in my car, but it also speaks to my mood and how I'm feeling. So that's another thing that people listening can do. So like, there's various things that you can do. Now, there's also, depending on the condition that you have, if you have mental illness, like there's certain things, like you have bipolar disorder where, you know, you may need psychiatric treatment where talking to somebody ain't enough.
Yeah.
So like, you don't just, you know what I'm saying, talk about your problems. You need some medication. Like, I'm for that if that's going to help, depending on what it is. You know what I'm saying? Whatever works for you. Like, I myself, I'm at a point now in my career and in my life, you know, like where like just going to therapy is not enough for me. Like, I actually am going to start introducing holistic medication, you know, to help, you know, whether it's CBD oil or something like that, tea, that kind of stuff to kind of help with, you know, what I'm going through. Because now, like, the type of weight that I carry now, like, man, if I told you all the shit I got going on, all the magazines I've been in, like,
talk, I'm going to be on King.
Billboards and shit,
talk
like that.
Shit,
it's a lot King. Of, you know, it's a lot of pressure. So like, I need a little bit more than just, you know, everything that's gotten me to where I am. So there's different phases and evolution in your journey with mental health as well, man. And so, and the one other thing I really want to plug in this program is a new program that I'm rolling out, top of the year next year, called Cope Dealers. So like dope dealers, but like coping mechanisms. So Cope Dealers. So, and it's basically, it's a program, you know, where, you know, you sit down with your neighborhood coke dealer, Archie Green, and we talk about real issues. You know, we talk about how to heal in those real issues. So it's a program where I want to partner with high schools, colleges, even corporations, where we talk about the real issues. And then I share with everyone various ways that we can work through those. And some of the subjects that we're going to talk about is toxic masculinity. You know, the way that we mistreat black women, you know, and how trauma from sexual abuse is a factor in that. You know what I'm saying? And talking about, you know, how we treat members of the LGBTQ community, how that needs to be improved. Various ways to help refine how we as black men and black boys carry ourselves. So definitely be on the lookout for that very soon.
Let's get it in.
For sure, for sure. So I'm a backtrack us a little bit, Archie, because
for sure.
You said that when Johnny talked about his experience, that, you know, people really don't know what to do, what to say. So all transparency, I don't even know if we talked about this on the pod. I don't even know if I say so.
We did one time. I feel like we did. The episode got erased some way, somehow.
I feel like something happened. But so, you know, Johnny went through when he went through, and I've known these two for 10 plus years, family or whatever. Mm-hmm. So me and Johnny go back to high school, college. So when Johnny went through what he went through, I'll be honest, I didn't know what to say. I didn't really know what to do. I just was like, are you good? But, you know, a lot of people get tired of hearing, are you good, all mm-hmm. the time. So, but it's like, you know, you see somebody you care about, you know, your homie, your brother, your family member, you like you wanted to do what? Especially if it's kind of, not so you foreign, because, you know, you've heard about people, but it's like that hits close to home.
Right.
So it's mm-hmm. like, you wanted to do what? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's heavy. Like, what can I do to help? You know, do we need to talk more? You know, what can I do? Because, I mean, you know, we talk about going to get help and talk to people. I mean, but, like, you know, we stayed before. I think Johnny said, you know, sometimes therapy isn't for everybody. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Everybody needs to be okay with that. But then kind of, you know, speaking that and segueing with this question to you, Archie, how big or we'll say not big, do you think that people, one, kind of acknowledging, you know, not necessarily just their mental health, but the depression and all of that, you know, with them immediately, and then kind of branching off of that, do you think that people should seek help in terms of talking to somebody first?
Well, I think, and it's a very good question that you're asking. I think, you know, at first, I think the most important thing is to be there for your friend, to be there for your family member that is going through that trauma, is going through that pain. You know, like, the people around me know, because I mean, there's no cure for depression. Like, I still have this shit. I will have this until I die. There's no cure for it.
Right.
So, like, there's certain things, like, I let my friends know, like, look, like, one of my best friends is a photographer. Sometimes I'll hit him up, be like, yo, can I come through to the studio? He knows what that means. I just need to be around somebody. Like, I may not say shit. I may just be in it. Like, even if he's got a couple gigs and he's shooting or whatever, like, he'll just say, yo, just come through to the studio. Cause I want to be around another human being. You know what I'm saying? To just be around that energy. The other thing is, you know, when you're dealing with someone, especially someone who is suicidal or is talking about suicide, is you first of all, you want to acknowledge that this depression that they have is not them. It is a third party. It's a chemical imbalance. It's whatever you want to call it. I mean, I personify depression. I call it the monster. So, like, whenever I feel like heavy, when I feel what I call the monster, I have a conversation with depression. Like, look, bro, I got shit I got to do. So you can either come with me or you can kick rocks. Like, I got shit I got to do. Right. Like, I can feel. So that helps me as well. But being open and transparent, excuse me, about what you're going through is so important. Like, it's just like what Kanye said on Ye, where he was like, people say, like, don't say this, don't say that. You know, say it out loud to see how it feels. It's so important because you, no matter how ugly, no matter how toxic it sounds, you feel a million times better. Like, man, like, just saying, like, yo, I feel like shit. I feel like I ain't shit. I ain't gonna be shit. As soon as you say that, it's no longer something that's ruminating in your mind. So you're letting that thing go. You're letting that shit out of your system. You're letting that shit go. And so, like, you know, the best way to approach someone who is in that is just to be there for them and to not judge them. Like, bro, like, let's talk about it. Or just tell them, like, look, man, whatever it is you want to talk about, know that I'm not going to judge you. Whatever it is you're going through, I may not understand it, but I'm here to help as best I can, to be your friend. And if you need to just talk, if you need to just vent and me not say shit, then just I'm here for you. You know, and that makes a world of difference for someone who may not be ready to go to therapy. Does that answer the question?
Oh, it definitely does.
Yo.
Definitely does.
This probably, I'm not even going to hold you, Archie. I don't think we've had an episode with as much jewelry in it as this one.
this low key. Oh, I don't know if it's just the timing for me and the things that I'm experiencing myself, but low key, man, yo, he was talking his shit today, bro. Like, yo,
hey, yo, Dev. When I bring a guest on, I don't fucking disappoint.
Yeah, hey, you know, I was going to say off air, I was going to say, hey, good shit, Johnny. No cap,
nigga. When I bring a guest on, you know it's about to be a fucking time, nigga.
Yo, this, dude, this, it's so many gems in this episode, and I got about 20 different names that I could name it because there were so many gems that you dropped this episode. Before we get out of here, I do want to leave to one of your songs. I'm going to play the song Layers on our exit out of here. But before we exit out of here, I would like for you to tell people how they can support you, how they can stream your music, where they can find it at, as well as how they can donate and support the nonprofit Pilgrim Layers back as well.
For sure, for sure. So, you know, my music is on all the streaming platforms, just Archie Green. My last project, the Black Pharaoh EP, is on there, as well as the song Layers that you guys are about to hear. To learn more information about us, you can go to our website. That's www.pdlb.org. There's information about our programs, as well as a link for you to donate. We are a tax-deductible donation organization. We're a nonprofit, so anything you donate is tax-deductible. And then you can follow us on IG, on Facebook, Pilgrim Layers Back, at Pilgrim Layers Back on IG. You can follow me at Archie_Green on Instagram as well, man. And we on Facebook, we on all that, man. That's again, man, this is the most, like, for real, y'all. Like, this has been the most refreshing interview I've done in a long time.
Round of applause for y'all, man.
For sure.
I appreciate that, for real. You know, I just want to say, like...
No, I'm gonna let you finish, but
I'm gonna be my man's, because appreciate yeah. You know, for real, I'm gonna be really transparent here, like, you know, from just someone I really never met, really person to, like, face to face, person to person, and really, like, you know, just for him able to just respond back and just be so open to speak with us, you know what I mean, and speak about some deep topics, and for us to be comfortable in this space, you know, just I just want to say thank you, you know, just appreciate your time. Appreciate everything that you brought to the podcast today, bro. Cause, like, this probably in a minute we had like a good deep conversation, a serious, knowledgeable, you know, conversation about these type of topics. Not a whole bunch of toxic niggas in a circle.
That's a fact. When can we get you back on the pod? Like, when can we get you in person on the pod, Archie?
Well, I mean, hopefully once this COVID shit.
You said the numbers go down.
The numbers is pretty high, my good brother.
But y'all, I mean, for real, y'all can hit me, man. Hit me anytime, man. I love to come back for sure.
Let's do it, man. Listen, y'all know how we get. You know how we operate here, man. So make sure y'all support Archie Green the same way that y'all support us. And fucking shout out to y'all for supporting us each and every week. It does not go unnoticed. We see y'all. We see that y'all help with the merch. We love that. We see that y'all help with supporting, sharing, streaming, all of that. We are forever indebted to y'all. Let us know how we can support y'all as well. It's been another beautiful fucking episode of the Outrighteous Podcast.
We got some gems dropping.
Lot.
Not just the episode, but we got some stuff in the vault that's coming out very, very, very soon. So stay tuned.
Yeah, and just shout out to... You know, also on the serious tip, now y'all got your shout outs. The funny shout outs before I get serious real quick.
Go ahead.
Man, shout out to everybody that's, you know, might be possibly going through something. But you know that I know that seasonal depression is gonna come up. You know, it's getting darker outside and everything. If you think you need to seek help, seek help. If you feel like you need to go to a therapist, go to one. If you feel like you need to go check into a hospital, it is okay. It's nothing wrong. There's nothing taboo about it. There's nothing weird about it. To get yourself help. If you see a bump on your leg and you go to the hospital, but you know what I mean, it's okay, right? Yeah. If you feel sad, depressed, and you feel like you need to a point you need help with your mind, go. There's nothing wrong.
100%.
That's a fact. Do you have any goofy shout outs?
Oh man, shout out to the broke niggas, man. Broke motherfuckers can't do this shit.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Broke niggas ain't know how to work the Zoom.
Hey Johnny, they're not potting at this level.
Bro. Oh, they're not. They're not.
Yo, shout out. They're not, man. Archie, we about to play Layers, man. Thank you again for coming through. Don't hang up yet, because we're gonna chat with you just for 1 second after we end this Zoom. Yo, shout out, man. We appreciate you, King.
Thank you guys, man. And appreciate y'all kings as well.
Thank you.
hit them nails back. For me, music is therapeutic. That's why I use it. Helps me break these nightmares down that are lucid. Don't wanna lose it. Pour it all out in my MacBook until it turns to the fact book. Let's talk facts. My life was very dark. Moved in with my sister, was smooth at the start. No interruptions from art, except a little beagle's bark. You could say it was a walk in the park, except the elephant that no one else could see. I was broken in stocks, beat till she helped me to my feet. Finally got a job, but freedom was still robbed. You see, the court paper said I couldn't really drive that far. You asked why I